is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague and mentor, Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, author most recently of Noble State. We turn to the breaking news. This is 14 hours, less than 24 hours. That's enough these days, given how the world is going. The U.S. and Iran will resume nuclear talks on Saturday. Gregory, a very good evening to you. Thank you. This is another round of talks about the suspect nuclear weapons program. CNN writes, a second round of nuclear talks between the United States and Iran concluded last Saturday. Delegations from both countries met in Rome for negotiations following an initial round in Oman last weekend. The Trump administration expressed optimism. All right, they're talking about the suspect nuclear weapons program. At the same time, it is clear for more than a year now that Iran is the author of the predation of the whole region, but especially driving the Hamas attack on Israel's settlements and the Hezbollah raining of artillery and rockets down on the north of Israel, and the Houthi attack on the Red Sea and on Israel, and of the Iranian direct assault on Israel. Iran is the author of all of that. But the U.S. chooses to talk to Iran about the suspect nuclear weapons program. I'm told the positions for both sides are this. Iran wants a return to the JCPOA of 2015. The position out of Israel is said to be that Iran must not be permitted to have a nuclear weapon. No negotiation possible. It must not have that weapon, and the program must be dismantled. The U.S. position is said to be somewhere in between. This is a piece of the larger story of the moving conflicts of the Middle East. For example, MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, recently sent one of his foreign ministers, the foreign minister, to Tehran to sit with the Ayatollah. This would be the Hatfields and McCoy sitting together. So clearly there is change afoot. The Iran story and the Middle East story, are they converging or are they diverging, given the changing sides in Syria, in Lebanon, in Egypt? Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Well, as usual, there's politics and then there's reality. The reality is that we know, and the State Department and the U.S. government knows, that Iran already has some nuclear weapons. They've tested them, not just the ones that they acquired from the Soviet Union when it collapsed, but also their indigenous weapons. That's really been the case since the 1990s. However, what my old friend and former CIA guy in the Middle East, Miles Copeland, said in his book, The Game of Nations, was that the U.S., a conduct of foreign policy is just U.S. domestic politics carried out abroad. In other words, what the U.S. is saying with regard to Iran and negotiations and nuclear weapons and so on is about getting a major political achievement abroad, which reflects into the U.S. as a victory for the president. That's always been the case. The reality is, of course, that Iran is absolutely critical for the U.S. moving forward. The U.S. strategic posture is moving eastward from NATO as the U.S. gets more back into the Middle East, if you like. But Iran is critical, far more so than Turkey, for getting up into Central Asia. And if Iran can be brought back into the Western camp, so much the better. Now, how do we get there? What does that mean? Yes, you have to address the nuclear weapons issue simply because it's the big apparent political stumbling block. Look at Prime Minister Netanyahu's view on this from Israel. It's hugely political for him. He has to be absolute and categorical in his messages to say, well, let's bomb, let's keep this going, because his future political credibility depends on that. However, the reality is going to be whether, and I believe it's possible, whether President Trump can, through these negotiations, start moving Iran back into a quiescent position. They will have to definitely give up something in exchange for something else. to make the optics look good. But the reality is, if the U.S. gains access through Iran to Central Asia, then the U.S. is in the key position between Russia and the People's Republic of China. And that is what's at stake here. But this is all part of a broader issue in the Middle East, in which Turkey has basically declared war on Israel in a formal sense, that it has taken over control of the Syrian government, all the Syrian defense operations and their intelligence and other governance issues are controlled either by Turkish military officers or officers from their National Intelligence Service, MIT. So essentially, Syria is now a Turkish state, which puts Turkey theoretically on the front lines, on the border with Israel at the Golan. This is obviously unconscionable for Israel. But Turkey is trying to do more. It's trying to resume control over Lebanon, over the Eastern Mediterranean. It attempted to rebuild its ties into Egypt, even after its Muslim Brotherhood candidate failed as president of Egypt. But it's also, Turkey is also trying to surround Turkey from the south as well. Its activities in Sudan and Ethiopia and Somalia are profound, and that's part of this whole picture. You can't actually separate and say, well, let's deal with the Iran nuclear talks as a separate issue. It's all connected. The whole antipathy towards the Yemenis, so-called Houthis — they're not Houthis, that's just a small part of it — the Yemenis is based on the theory that the Yemenis are a cat's paw for Iran against Israel, which is not really the case, because the Yemenis are very much independent of that. So you've got all of these factors swirling around together. Now, moving the discussions between the U.S. and Tehran back to Muscat in the Sultanate of Oman is absolutely critical. Oman is the master discreet intermediary which makes things happen. The late Sultan of Oman, Qaboos, was the master of this, when greatly beloved in the country. His cousin, who succeeded him, is equally adept and even more discreet than Qaboos himself. So you've got those talks underway. They could yield a lot. In that sense, Israel needs to be kept quiet, in a sense, so that it doesn't embarrass these discrete U.S. initiatives, and that could come to something. Now, the Russians are involved in this as well, of course, because the Russians are trying to keep Turkey under control. They're trying to keep the Red Sea under control. They're competing with Turkey in Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia particularly. And in the middle of all of this, you've got Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, previously the allies in the attack on Yemen, are now divided over the whole question of the Red Sea as well. They're united on supporting Israel, but UAE and Saudi Arabia are backing opposite sides in the Ethiopian civil war. And this is going to have a profound effect on whether Ethiopia collapses or whether it's reintegrated, possibly including Eritrea, which is supported by the UAE. Saudi Arabia supports Ethiopia. So all of these things make it very, very complex. And I don't see anybody looking at a master plan for this, whether it's in Washington or, for that matter, in Israel. I think Netanyahu's been quite reactive. He's been opportunistic, obviously, and very successful at quieting Hamas, which is a Turkish creature, not an Iranian creature. Iran was conned into giving them a lot of money and weapons, but Iran didn't control them. Turkey did. Turkey now controls the Syrian government. Turkey has been trying to co-opt a lot of the Hezbollah movement, which is nominally Shia, in Lebanon. So Turkey is going to be the big spoiler in all of this, and they are literally at war with Israel right now. Iran has pulled right back. It knows it can't defeat Israel. The question is whether Israel or Israel plus the U.S. could bomb Iran out of nuclear weapons. The nuclear weapons actually don't mean much because the Iranians have had them. They don't know what to do with them, like South Africa. South Africa developed nuclear weapons. They were a burden. They couldn't use them. They were a great PR stunt, if you like. But the reality is that they're not useful in Iranian strategy right now, as they weren't for South Africa. So Iran can give them up. The question is whether it, in so doing, it has to divide its loyalties between Moscow and Washington in the outcome. The bottom line is that Washington is not going to support the clerics forever. Russia could support the clerics forever. So the clerics themselves are scrambling to keep their own jobs. That's the bottom line. So the negotiations are going to have to bear that in mind or give the clerics a decent exit from political power.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, too many villains, too little time. We're rushing to Moscow for the Ukraine conversation. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.